You're listening to the Gym Class Podcast, KGYM Sports Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. As the Major League trade deadline clock has expired about 5 minutes ago, and holy cow, do we have a flurry of activity. Welcome to the Gym Class. Mark Dukes with you today for the next hour or part thereof, along with Ben, our producer today. Scott Unash trying to dodge raindrops for his Hawkeye Downs racing tonight. Looks okay until maybe later on in the evening. And what a refreshing change in temperatures here in eastern Iowa. We're in the 70s as opposed to the 90s as we were earlier this week. As I prepared to put this show together earlier in the week, I decided, let's get a couple guests. And I'm excited about them. Pat Cobb, director of the Zach Johnson Foundation Classic Golf Tournament, will join us in about 10 minutes. And Rob Gray, excuse me, from Cyclone Fanatic. We have yet to check in with an Iowa State person since Oklahoma and Texas decided to flee to the SEC. So those guests coming up. But the trade deadline has caught me aback, frankly. I didn't think it would be this active. We're going to try to cram in a whole bunch of information and news and comments in the next hour. So many things to talk about in on Major League Baseball. I also knew it was going to be the day after the NBA draft. And if you had yes in our poll question yesterday, you're a winner because both Joe Wieskamp and Luka Garza taken in the draft last night in the second round. Wieskamp with the 41st pick to San Antonio. Luka Garza, 52nd pick to Detroit, where he will presumably be united with former Hawkeye Tyler Cook. Draft grades today, Detroit received very good grades with Cade Cunningham, the overall number one pick, and Luka Garza talked about being a rotational guy for Detroit. We do have that, and congratulations to both. Gym Class presented today and every day by DuPaco Community Credit Union. Learn how you can boost your financial well-being by going to dupaco.com. Folks, will also have another giveaway in our last pair standing. We'll have a pair of tickets to one of the four grandstand shows at the Iowa State Fair. That coming up towards the end of the hour. Okay, Major League trade deadline, as I said, it expired at 3 o'clock about 8 minutes ago, and just a tremendous flurry of activity. Cub fans, how you feeling right now? David Ross is going to look around the clubhouse tonight and say, where'd everybody go? Where'd everybody go? We learned earlier Anthony Rizzo traded to the Yankees. Today, star reliever Craig Kimbrell traded to the White Sox for second baseman Nick Madrigal and pitcher Cody Hoyer. With Kimbrell and Liam Hendricks, it gives the White Sox a formidable bullpen. Boom. Javi Baez to the Mets, where he will be paired with Francisco Lindor. That was Baez's wish. Trevor Williams also going over to the Mets. And finally, just before the trade deadline expired, Chris Bryant of the Cubs to the San Francisco Giants. So Rizzo, Baez, Bryant, and Kimbrell all gone for the Chicago Cubs. How are you feeling, Cub fans? 2016 World Series seems like a memory really in the a far distant rearview mirror. Great accomplishment. But the core of that ball club, aside from Wilson Contreras, I suppose, and there may be a couple others, David Ross still around as the manager. But this has been a fire sale for the Cubs. What do you think? 319-366-1600. My Twins active today, Jose Berríos, ace of that staff, traded to the Toronto Blue Jays for, what I understand, are a couple good prospects. The number 16 prospect in all of Major League Baseball, shortstop outfielder, and the number 68 prospect in baseball, right-handed pitcher. Those two players, 20, 22 years old, and perhaps will be do great things for the Twins down the road. The Twins also unloaded J.A. Happ, a left-handed pitcher, and got in return two pitchers. Mainly, the main piece was John Gant. Happ going to the St. Louis Cardinals. I'm not sad about that. Former Twin Kyle Gibson and fellow pitcher Ian Kennedy have been dealt by the Texas Rangers to the Philadelphia Phillies. So it seems like all or most of the contenders have really stepped forward, tried to strengthen themselves as we head down the home stretch of the Major League Baseball season. On the text line, 319-366-1600, Matt in Fairfax, I've never seen a dismantling like the Cubs just did. I'm cool with moving a couple guys, but my goodness, they gutted this team. I'm anxious to hear our friend Todd Brommelkamp on his show with Alex Kuhn from 4 to 6. As you've listened to local programming, you know Todd is as big of Cubs fans, perhaps bigger than I am, of the Twins, and he can give a unique perspective, I think, to what the Cubs are doing today. 1085, let me tell you how Cub fans are feeling. As a Cubs fan, I'm extremely hurt, but at the same time, as a logical thinker, it's probably what's best for the organization. What's best? Getting rid of Rizzo, Bryant, Baez, Kimbrel? I wonder how David Ross is going to make out that lineup card tonight. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if this works for the Cubs. Clearly, they're not a contender this year. Clearly, they won't be a contender next year unless some things change. Also on the Twins side of things, it appears Byron Buxton will stay with the Twins. He was not the subject of any trade today. That doesn't mean he won't be in the future, but for right now, Byron Buxton remains a Minnesota Twin. There were reports and rumors out there that Kenta Maeda, number two in the rotation for the Twins, might be dealt. As far as I know, he was not. So, Twins not unloading as much as the Cubs, and no other team in baseball has unloaded like the Cubs have today. 8503, it's a sad day for a Cubs fan, and I'm so appreciative of what those guys accomplished. I just don't know how many times the top three or four market in baseball can expect a fan base to endure a total rebuild. And yeah, if you were a Cubs fan, you were thrilled to win in 2016, and rightfully so. My franchise has won a World Series, not as recently. But as Cub fans, were you hoping for a couple more pieces of hardware in the trophy case with this core group? It certainly happened in 2016. It was a joyous occasion for long-suffering Cub fans. Perhaps did you expect a little bit more out of this core group? 9664 on the text line. My brother has been a Cub fan for 60 years. He's a Twins fan now. All aboard. 3166. It's the Cub. If the Cubs, it shouldn't be a surprise. Do they ever want to win? Yeah, they did. And they did win in 2016. And were contenders a couple other years, but they've fallen off the radar right now. The core group is gone, and, you know, continue to weigh in, if you will. But we need to get to our first break. We'll revisit the trade deadline. I want to bring on Pat Cobb and visit with him a little bit about the Zach Johnson Foundation Classic, which was held on Monday right after this.
5G is here. But
welcome back to the Gym Class 319 on this Friday afternoon. Mark Dukes alongside Ben, our producer today, taking you through the 3 o'clock hour leading up to Department of Corrections. Just learned that Todd is off today. It will be Rob Howe and Alex Kuhn from 4 to 6. Perhaps Todd may need the weekend to digest the Cubs situation. Right now, very pleased to bring in our friend Pat Cobb, chairman of the Zach Johnson Foundation Golf Classic. Pat, how are you? Thanks for taking the time.
There?
Yes, Pat. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yep.
You got me, Pat?
I got you.
All right. Thanks for joining us today. Usually we talk prior to the classic, the Zach Johnson Classic. We didn't this year. I don't have a reason, but it was last Monday. And boy, what a couple of years it has been for you and everybody involved in the Foundation Classic. But it was a little better this year than 2020, huh?
Much better than 2020. At least we were able to get the tournament in and had a good group of people here to play, and we had wonderful sponsor support again, as has been affecting the whole world. COVID got us last year. We weren't able to have our event, and it made a heck of a difference. It seemed like an awful long time between the last time we had the event in 2019 and last Monday. I'll tell you, it was a long slog, and it really hurts a nonprofit when you lose your major fundraising event of the year. So we're happy to be back on track, frankly.
But the gala prior to the Monday event has really come through in a big way, hasn't it?
It really truly has. We had to cut back a bit on it this year, but we still had about 500 people at the gala. We raised about $190,000 at the gala, which is a really wonderful, wonderful evening for us with great sponsors there and great auction items, trips, and things that a lot of folks were anxious to get. So we were really, really pleased with the gala and the turnout. And the elephant in the room was we were missing one guy, and made it a little bit uncomfortable. But we got through in good shape, and I think we proved. And as he said, the organization is much bigger than one person, and we got by without him. So hopefully, we'll never have to do that again.
Yeah, if you missed it, Zach had to quarantine after testing positive for COVID-19 after the John Deere Classic, preventing him from going to the Open. His wife Kim was there, and Zach had a video message that I know, and they're private people. They didn't want to be asked about the vaccine, this and that. Nobody really needs to know, but it sounds like Zach's on the mend.
It does. I talked to him Monday evening, and he was feeling much better and has returned home and is recuperating there. It was just amazing how down the COVID got him. He was very, very ill, particularly congested, and as we had conversations during the week, he could barely get through a sentence without coughing through it. So it was really tough. He said something to the effect that I feel like I just ran 5 marathons and haven't had any rest since. So it's a tough deal. It's a tough disease, and hopefully one of these days we'll be able to say it's behind us.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more, Pat, and glad to hear Zach is feeling at least a little bit better. And what kind of Zach always attracted a tremendous group of professionals. I think I saw JT Poston out there. What was the representation there like?
Well, you know, we were really, really pleased. It was an interesting week on the tour since the tour is not playing this week and the Corn Ferry Tour is not playing this week. So it was difficult to catch guys coming from one tournament going to another. And many of them, since they get so few weeks off during the year, had made other plans. But, yeah, JT was there and came back. He was here a year or 2 years ago, as you'll remember. Jonathan Bird's been here several times, was back again. Joel Damon, who's played really well and did really well at the British, was here with us this year. We had one of my favorite TV golf commentators, Colt Knost, was here, and always adds a little life to the party when he shows up. So we were pleased. The other thing that we did this year that we've not done in the past, but I think we'll do again, is we had several guys here that are well along on the Korn Ferry Tour, guys that are pretty well assured they're going to have their tour card next year. And I'm telling you, these guys can flat play, and they're really, really good guys. So we were pleased with the field, although it wasn't there weren't the splashy names that that we're used to having, and I expect we'll have some of those back next year.
Of course, this whole endeavor, Pat, I don't have to tell you, is all about kids on course. And if I remember right, either last year or this year, the first kids that had the opportunity to enter the program at whatever elementary graduated this year, or was it last year?
No, they will be seniors in this coming school year.
Okay.
Our second graders will be graduating, but it was kind of a great milestone. One of our great sponsors, RSM, put together a scholarship program where they give us a four-year renewable $10,000 a year scholarship for three kids every year in the program, and we were able to award those first scholarships this year. So we've got three really happy soon-to-be seniors as a result of that, and I think it speaks to the program and to the job that we've done trying to get kids ready for the next step in their life. Post-secondary education is so important, and you can give a kid $10,000 a year for 4 years to go to school, it's going to help them a lot. And these kids need the financial help to get rid of that roadblock in their lives.
It's fantastic the foundation is able to do that. And I know, Pat, you start planning for the next year almost the minute the previous tournament is over. But after the last 2 years, I'm not sure. Maybe you got practice in preparing plan A, B, C, and D. I don't know, but what are your thoughts towards next year?
Well, next year, you know, we're so dependent on what our world looks like in terms of COVID and communicable diseases. But we're going to go forward this year. We, as you can imagine, had scenario A, B, C, and D, and we're picking those out. And in all honesty, 10 days before the event, we weren't sure we were going to be able to pull it off with the illness and with Zach coming down with COVID, and would we be able to get people to come and all of those things. And finally, through some tenacity and some great faith by Zach and Kim and our board, we made the judgment to go forward, thinking that if we postpone for a month or 6 weeks, the way COVID's coming back again, seemingly, we might have to cancel it altogether. So we made the judgment to go forward. Our sponsors were incredibly supportive, and the players came in, had a good time, and we were thrilled that we had made that decision to go forward. So you're right, we are planning for our next event as we go forward next year, and who we're going to have in, and how we're going to set it up, and what changes we might make as a result of the world changing.
Great to hear, Pat, and under the circumstances, terrific success. The kids will benefit, and that's the main thing. And we're going to look forward to talking to you next year and hopefully under more normal circumstances, okay?
That would be wonderful. We would look forward to it, and our apologies to our wonderful citizenry. We weren't able to invite them to come out and join us this year for the event. But hopefully we're going to be able to open the gates next year, have the community back in, and let them come out and see some of the finest golfers in the world compete at Elmcrest for a day.
That'd be wonderful. I know you'll do your best, Pat. Thanks again for taking the time today.
Hey, happy to do it anytime, Mark. Thank you, and appreciate your support.
Welcome, Pat Cobb, chairman of the Zach Johnson Foundation Classic. Wanted to make sure and catch up with him as we weren't able to bring him in prior to the tournament, but there you have it, the update on what happened at the Zach Johnson Foundation Classic. Right now, let's get to a Emil's Hideaway scoreboard. It's brought to you by Emil's Hideaway, located on Glenbrook Drive Southeast near Lindale Mall, behind the Taco John's, next to Home Depot. Open now at 4 o'clock every day for dine-in, Monday through Saturday. Also available for online ordering and curbside pickup. At the state baseball tournament today, Marion, still the Indians until August 1st, have advanced to the state championship game in Class 3A, winning a 9-2 semifinal verdict over Central DeWitt. The other 3A semifinal going on right now, Xavier found itself down 5-0 to Dubuque Waller, but has battled back to make it 5-4. That in the fourth inning right now. Coming up at 5 o'clock at Duane Banks Field in Iowa City, Cedar Rapids Prairie will take on number 1 Pleasant Valley in a 4A semifinal. No action in Major League Baseball this afternoon, except for the trade deadline, of course. The Twins and Cardinals are getting together. We'll have that game at 6:30 p.m. on 107.5 FM. Jose Barrios was scheduled to be the starter for the Twins. He is now a member of the Toronto Blue Jays. And actually, since we closed our discussion to bring on Pat Cobb, John Lester, former Cub, has gone to the St. Louis Cardinals just before the deadline. And Jorge Soler of the Kansas City Royals heading for Atlanta. We're going to take a break, and when we do, we'll come back and talk with Rob Gray of Cyclone Fanatic about conference realignment and all things Iowa State right after this.
I struggled with symptoms like frequent gas and stomach pain for years.
I was bloated all the time with daily diarrhea.
Welcome back to the gym class at 3:34 on this Friday. We will be followed by the Todd Brommelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn. Rob Howe sitting in for Todd today. Right now we want to bring in longtime guest and friend Rob Gray of Cyclone Fanatic, senior writer for that terrific publication. Rob, how's your summer?
It's been great. A lot of vacation time for me, and as, of course, luck or fate would have it, I'm on vacation at our cabin in Minnesota and Southern California when all the Big 12 Oklahoma stuff breaks, so I'm catching up a little bit, although I kept myself apprised of the situation quite well, as crazy as it is.
Rob, I don't know if I noticed this before, but on your Twitter description, you say former Chicago Cubs fan. Is that before or after today?
It was before the season started, and I was very disappointed in what I felt the Rickets were doing. They were standing pat on a team that was fatally flawed, that couldn't manufacture runs, would only win if they could hit home runs. And, you know, even though their value of the team has doubled since they bought the team, didn't seem very keen on spending money heading into the season. So, alas, you have a mediocre team, and then you sell off the core when you're one of the richest franchises in MLB. So I saw it coming, I believe. I'll be back on board when they either the Rickets change their tune or they have an ownership team that's interested in winning and not just making money. That's my rationale.
Don't hold your breath.
It happened for even the Rickets. What a boon to them that they actually did finally win in 2016. But I agree.
Rob, of course, the main reason we wanted to bring you on, and even though you're on vacation, I know you stayed abreast of it. And that is because we haven't heard from an Iowa State reporter or perspective, and that's why we called you on today. With Oklahoma and Texas leaving, sealed and delivered to the SEC, is there any sense of word on the street, sentiment among Cyclone fans, administration, that you can garner at this point?
Well, there's so much. I mean, obviously, some people, and this is your casual fan, they're just happy to cheer on the Cyclones. It wouldn't matter if they were playing in, you know, the Mountain West or the, you know, or anywhere. But obviously the core that has helped the fan base build up so much and lead Jack Tri-Stadium to expand and sell out week after week in the fall, when fans, of course, are allowed to fully populate the place. They're obviously upset. I mean, they're angry. I think there's a feeling of betrayal. And obviously when you add in the fact that apparently these machinations have been going on since late last year, and Bob Boltzmann has made it clear with a number of legal, documents, things released, cease and desist for ESPN, but also things in the works maybe regarding Oklahoma and Texas and the way they handled this when they're certainly, under contract, per se, with the Big 12. There's just so much uncertainty, and it just seems so ugly, you know. It seems like every time this happens, it's a cash grab, and when the cash grab occurs, it's the people who are supposedly the quote-unquote little people, whether it be Iowa State, Kansas State, even Oklahoma State's in that camp, and anybody else throughout the Big 12, that, they're stuck going, well, what now? And, I don't know. There's clearly more money in it. Clearly, it's the ESPN's benefit if the SEC gains Texas and Oklahoma. I don't know if it's college football's benefit, I think, but I would argue it isn't. But I think anger and just wanting to know what can happen next is a prevailing thing, and among the fan base, certainly.
November 6th, Texas rolls into Ames. What kind of reception will the Longhorns get?
Oh, if they thought horns down was offensive, they'll get a taste of some real vitriol, and I think well deserved. I mean, it's fine to, you know, whatever's best for them, right? They got to make some changes, and it sounds like the Regents are on board now in Texas, even though they're, you know, Texas A&M, there was some concern. Texas A&M eventually got on board and said they would vote to. But there's also the Texas legislature, which obviously a lot of, like any legislature, is also all kinds of stuff going on, often weird and strange. There are going to be people who are, state reps that are from Baylor's district and Texas Techs and all kinds of people that are going to be up in arms about this, and deservedly so. So it's going to be a circus. It already is somewhat of a circus. It's not a fun circus, right? I mean, I guess it's a circus if you, threw out a bunch of, neighborhood rabbits and watched them hop around. It's not fun, but nonetheless, very circus-like, and it will be a cascade of booze. Philly fans, it'll be like Philly fans welcoming anybody to their stadium when Texas rolls into Jack Trice Stadium.
Talking with Rob Gray, senior writer at CycloneFanatic.com, today on the Gym Class. Mark Dukes alongside Ben, our producer. I don't know that either one of us have the answer, Rob, and we probably don't, but I'm curious, going forward, do athletic directors like Jamie Pollard and others in the Big 12 look out for their own best interests, or do they follow the lead of the Big 12 and Bob Boltzmann?
Well, that's a good question, and obviously they're having a lot of conversations behind the scenes, and again, as far as I can tell, nothing is leaking out. I think, again, in part because there are all the legal matters, which could be many and complex across not only institutions and conferences, but also into the media entities, obviously. I think you always do, but I think as of right now, it's in best interest to act as a, or a big eight, a literal big eight. And I think, hope for the best solution for all of them. Now, it's hard to imagine how that conference remains a so-called Power Five or Group Five conference if they can't attract flagship schools of the caliber of Texas and Oklahoma, particularly Oklahoma in terms of competition and Texas in terms of money and resources. So it's... it's obviously an extremely tenuous time, but I think they have to be open to other possibilities. But at the same time, the grant of rights deal is in place through 2025. It's why Texas and Oklahoma continue to say they don't intend to leave until 2025, because there's the lawyers and all that. But we know they want it to be 2022. And you know, however that shakes out in terms of penalties and everything changes, you know, based on, I would hate to be, I guess I would love to be, because there'll be lots of billable hours, the lawyers involved, but I'd hate to be in terms of the mental gymnastics you're going to have to go through when all is said and done with regard to this, this mess.
Yeah, there is the matter when Oklahoma and Texas leave, be it 2025 or before. Iowa State and the rest of the remaining teams in the Big 12 are going to suffer significant loss in television revenue. And from that standpoint, yeah. Is the Big 10 in play for Iowa State?
Well, I mean, geographically and in terms of the academics and the land-grant status of Iowa State, and obviously the money trumps everything, but you put those things underneath it, I think they could be attractive. Obviously, Kansas is attractive because of basketball, and there were I don't know if we call them rumors or whether they call it reality that Kansas was reaching out to the Big Ten, and maybe some things occurred. I don't really trust anything right now in terms of, I mean, if stuff gets out as a rumor, especially now with lawyers involved, I would not trust that unless you literally know a person involved.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a caution to everyone, but you know, it would certainly, it doesn't, I mean, look, in terms of, you know, obviously people in the Big Ten will look at historically Big 12, I mean, Iowa State is historically a losing program, and this could be, if you're looking from the outside and you're not inside and feeling like, wow, they put together four really good teams and they are set themselves up to be a sustainable good to very good program. But if you look at it historically, I can see why people that are in Big 12 markets say, what in the heck does that add? Well, you know, if they have worked themselves up to be sustainably good, I think it adds a lot, because, you know, the Fiesta Bowl broadcast with Oregon, I think, was one of the most viewed bowl games. And there are lots of reasons why that happens. But I think Iowa State as a brand has risen significantly. It doesn't matter whether their name's out. Look, there are lots of teams in major cities that nobody knows anything about. Obviously not in major conferences. I don't think it matters if their name is Iowa any more than Oklahoma. It matters that Norman, Oklahoma are a major place. So I think they could add significantly. But again, you look at the other schools and it's hard. I mean, does the Pac-12 expand a little bit again with an Oklahoma State or a Kansas State? Or, you know what? It's just hard to I mean, I know the American Athletic Conference is something that ESPN wholly owns in terms of TV rights. And there was obviously, that's part of the cease and desist letter that Bowlesby talked about, that the feeling, appearance that ESPN is trying to steer what's left of the Big 12 into the AAC to their benefit. And again, all that speculation, but that cease and desist letter seems to indicate that there's some concern that this isn't just all happening, you know, it's a couple of schools deciding, well, let's just explore this last November and December and keep it under wraps. And then, I don't know, kind of announce that we plan on leaving the league and joining the SEC if they'll have us. So obviously there's a lot still to know, but certainly the revenue for those schools would plummet. I saw in the Houston Chronicle, there was a study that was, I mean, obviously done very quickly, so maybe take it with a grain of salt, but that all those schools combined could lose upwards of $1 billion when you look at lost revenue all across the board, whether it be tourism, hotel rooms. I mean, Texas and Oklahoma travel, they all travel really well, even with Texas not being a Big 12 title contender for several years. They still got a huge fan base and all the other, you know, all kinds of peripheral money considerations as well, you know, whether it be tournaments and all that kind of stuff. So it would be a huge, huge loss for all the students. And obviously it looks like it will be. So it's up to them and smarter minds and legal minds and everything else trying to figure out how to pick up the pieces and find the best landing spots possible for Iowa State and the rest of the remaining eight schools.
Well, on the field, Rob, it's pretty heady stuff. After last year's season and going into this year, you can't find a preseason poll without Iowa State being in the top 10. You just don't say that every day. And I know you've been around Iowa State a long time. But it's true. This is figures to be, with almost everybody coming back from that team last year, to be certainly a conference contender and maybe a contender on the national level. It's just over a month until that opener, September 4th, against UNI. Is Oklahoma the main stumbling block here, as usual?
Excuse me. Absolutely. The Spencer Rattler, good tailbacks in place, good receivers, tight ends, and a defense that's always going to be decent, good enough for Oklahoma when they're putting up big numbers generally. They're just, I think it's a two-team race. Now, obviously, all kinds of things can happen. I mean, the significant thing I think that has allowed Iowa State to sustain and build to this unprecedented level is the fact that they've been able to build quality depth basically all through the three deep. I remember we're talking about in the road zero when they got up to 6-6 and getting to bowl games somewhat consistently in that 3 or 4 year stretch, 3 of 4 seasons, sorry, that going to bowl games. Then, it was about making sure the two deep is solid, because there were times you couldn't lose somebody on the D line because whoever was behind them was either too green to play well or just didn't have the talent. Now they're feeling really good about the true three deep, which is what really good programs and borderline elite programs are able to do. So I think it's a two-team race. I think, Texas is magically always considered to be a contender and then rarely seems to be since that last national championship. Will the Longhorns be good? Yeah, they should be good. Oklahoma State should probably be good. I think it's hard to say with some of the teams that kind of had down years last year, like Kansas State. They're traditionally scrappy, do a lot of the things right, score on special teams and do little things to win. And, Texas Tech's been down a few years. Do they start to uptick? West Virginia down a little bit. They start coming back a little bit more. So it's going to be an interesting race. I mean, I think there's a lot of solid teams in there, but it's clear that if you look at returning talent and then you couple that with what last season was like with Oklahoma needing to beat Iowa State in the Big 12 title game, obviously, to not only get in the playoff, but win the Big 12 championship. And it was a highly competitive game, despite a really slow start by Iowa State, which happens a lot. It's got to be those two teams kind of head and shoulders above the rest, and, barring catastrophic injuries or worse things. And, of course, COVID's not over, per se. So, who knows? That was a huge effect on Iowa State's season opener last season. So, knock on wood, no teams have major problems there. But, yeah, I think it definitely comes down to Oklahoma and Iowa State, and I don't think there's a whole lot of separation there.
And we do have that little tussle September 11th, right?
Yeah. That should be good. And I know the Hawks are feeling good about a lot of things. I think it'll be interesting to see how the quarterback improves over last season. But one thing is, of course, the Hawks have won, 5 in a row in the series now. And it would be very important for Matt Campbell to break through in that rivalry there at Jack Trice Stadium. But, it should be a great matchup for sure.
Rob, we need to run. Great catching up with you. And thanks for taking the time today to join me.
Hey, great to talk to you, Mark, and you guys take care.
We'll do. We'll talk soon. Rob Gray from Cyclone Fanatic filling us in on the Iowa State angle of things today. Right now, 3:49, we want to give you an opportunity to win a pair of tickets to one of 4 grandstand shows at the Iowa State Fair. All 4 are in play. We have available tickets to the Doobie Brothers 50th Anniversary Tour featuring Tom Johnston, Michael McDonald, Pat Simmons, and John McPhee. That is August 22nd. Styx with special guest Tesla on August 18th. The Beach Boys with special guest Hanson on August 17th. Or you can choose Boys to Men with special guest Belle Biv DeVoe. August 15th, we'll take caller 6. Ben will give us our winner when we return after this.
With round-the-clock protection.
Welcome back to the last couple minutes of the gym class today on this Friday. Stay tuned from 4 to 6. It'll be the Todd Bromkamp Show with Alex Kuhn, with Rob Howe sitting in for Todd today. Update from the state baseball tournament. Xavier has fallen behind Dubuque Waller 10-5 in the sixth inning in the 3A semifinals. Earlier, Marion defeated Central DeWitt 9-2, so Marion will play the winner of the Xavier-Wallert game for the state championship tomorrow. Coming up at 5 o'clock, 4A semifinals. Cedar Rapids Prairie taking on Pleasant Valley. Certainly had an active first 15 minutes as we recap the trade deadline in Major League Baseball today. We touched on most of the deals, not all the deals, but as you would suspect, the text line very active about what the Cubs did today. And if you missed it, in addition to the Anthony Rizzo trade to the Yankees yesterday, the Cubs also have dealt Chris Bryant to the San Francisco Giants. The Cubs have dealt Javier Baez to the Mets, along with Trevor Williams. And the Cubs have dealt closer Craig Kimbrell to the White Sox for second baseman Nick Madrigal and pitcher Cody Hoyer. Certainly a fire sale on the north side of Chicago. The Cubs in action tonight, I believe, let's see, in Cincinnati, is that right? I'll check that. We will have Twins baseball, 6:30 p.m. on 107.5. Twins and Cardinals getting together. Both teams active today. The St. Louis Cardinals picked up John Lester, the former Cub left-hander. The Twins and Cardinals made a trade. J.A. Happ going to the Cardinals for two pitchers, including John Gant. So, very active day. I'm sorry, the Cubs are at Washington at 6:05 tonight. So we'll be interested to see what David Ross's lineup card looks like. Oh, boy. Let's see. NBA draft, are you happy with what happened with Joe Wieskamp and Luka Garza? Again, yesterday we asked you our poll question if both would be drafted, and I would have waited no. But the answer is yes, as Wieskamp went in the second round, 41st pick to San Antonio, and Luka Garza, 52nd in the second round to Detroit. I've already seen video of Garza and Cade Cunningham and Isaiah Livers meeting the media in Detroit. And the Pistons getting good reviews for this particular draft. We'll see how Garza pans out here in the summer leagues and whether he can get into the rotation with the Pistons. I think it's a good situation for him over there, in Detroit. A couple Olympic notes to pass on to you. The United States women's soccer team won on penalty kicks over the Netherlands to move into the semifinals against Canada. And the United States baseball team opened play in the Olympics with an 8-1 victory over Israel. The United States team being coached by Mike Socha. Next up for the Americans is South Korea. At this point, I want to thank Ben for sitting in, my producer today. Thanks to Pat Cobb, chairman of the Zach Johnson Foundation Classic, and Rob Gray, senior writer from the Cyclone Fanatic. Good stuff all around today. Scott Unash back on Monday. We'll talk to you then.
Goodyear believes in the power of moving forward, no matter if it's on the track, the court, or the field.